gotta keep them separated.
Hey everybody, welcome to Unscripted Wrestling here on the Everything Unscripted Network. I'm your lovely, gracious, humble, and drop-dead fucking sexy host, Daniel Douglas Hummer. And I'm here with my two co-hosts and two of the closest people to me on this earth. First off, the most important, Eric.
What's up?
And my brother Doug's here.
Yo, all right, so we're the two closest. So which one's the left testicle and which one's the right testicle?
I'll leave that one up to interpretation.
Well, you're right-handed, right?
Yeah.
All right, so then and you said Eric's the most important to you, so he would be the right one and I would be the left one. So, as usual, I'm the useless one.
Hey, you pump cum like all of them. So we got a big one tonight. Raven's top 10 matches and moments, a career retrospective on the man known as Raven.
So for anybody that doesn't know, this actually will, from now on, this will replace Doug's history lesson.
No more Doug's history lesson?
Nah.
Okay.
We're going to do, we'll do this instead.
I mean, we get, if someone wants to hear it and we get fan questions or something, you know, nothing, never say never. But
yeah.
This is the format we're working with, so here we go. Now, let's get into Scott Levy. Raven is probably one of the more...
Before we do that, and I'm sorry.
We'll plug at the end.
Okay.
Raven is one of the more enigmatic... How do you say it? I'm fucking up the word now.
He's an enigma.
Yeah, he is an enigma. And he is one of those, like, he was so great on the microphone. He was pretty good in the ring. But he made ECW. When you think ECW, to me, I know you think of Sabu, you think of, you know, Taz and Sandman, Dreamer. But to me, when you really think about it, you think of Raven. And he went other places and still did well. I mean, his WWF run, and we'll get into it, was not stellar, but Raven is the fucking man.
Well, and here's the thing. He came in to ECW in 95, and he kind of, like, revitalized, like, the promotion. Like, he kind of gave it, like, that kickstart that it needed. Because the promotion technically was being led by Shane Douglas, so you knew it was going to fail. So, like, Raven comes in, and the whole Tommy Dreamer feud and the Sandman feud.
Yeah.
Like, if it wasn't for those feuds, I don't think the promotion would have lasted, you know, through 1997, 1998.
No.
I mean, it lasted till about 2001, but still, like, Raven, and again, because of the psychology of both feuds, and we'll get to it because that those feuds occupy a lot of the top 10 moments.
It just, and it tells you a lot about ECW and a lot about how their way of letting the creator, of letting the athlete, letting the entertainer entertain and write his own promos and do his own shtick and see what works, see what doesn't, how it can really be beneficial for some people. I mean, we see the high spots, obviously, in Cactus, and Steve Austin's probably one of the bigger ones that you would think of. But
promo?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Cactus, too, because Cactus really...
Yeah, but you go to ECW, you get a good promo, because you're allowed to do a lot of your own shit.
Right.
I think Scott Levy is one of the biggest cases, because you see him in WCW as Scotty Flamingo a little bit. You see him as Johnny Polo in the WWF. That didn't work. Now you have him as his own thing, and you're letting him do what he wants, and he creates gold here.
Yeah. Well, and also, too, you can go way back. I mean, he started, you know, in the early 80s. And, you know, he's a college-educated man, you know, degree in criminal justice, you know, trained and, you know, trained at the Larry Sharp's Monster Factory. And then he started wrestling in Puerto Rico, then in Memphis, and as Scotty the Body. And then, of course, in Portland, he was managed by the woman that would eventually become Tori in the WWE, the ugly Tori. The
yeah.
one that was with, you know, Kane and then Xbox.
Yeah.
And then I remember a lot of Scotty from GWF, the Global Wrestling Federation, when he was a Palm Beach heartthrob, Scott Anthony. And one of the things he did, he was part of like the first big stable, the Cartel. And if you guys remember, you know, when we had on the GWF guys and they were talking about, you know, trying to, the only problem with the Cartel stable is they were trying to, you know, they had this mystery of who's the boss, who's the boss. And they couldn't get Tony Danza. And like, the problem is that they couldn't afford to bring in a big name to reveal themselves to be the boss.
Yeah.
Like, so like that was kind of doomed. And then Scotty was involved in a feud with the Handsome Stranger, you know, Mark Bagwell. But, you know, the feud ended when Bagwell left because, you know, the people that were funding the money for the guys to get their back and forth, because the problem with GWF is the GWF offices were actually in Atlanta. Okay. But they wrestled in Dallas. So people had to travel from Atlanta to Dallas every week. They couldn't, like, for some reason, the promotion couldn't be based in Atlanta. Or they couldn't say, hey, if you want to work here, you got to fucking live here. So, like, Bagwell ran out of money, so he couldn't get there back and forth anymore. So, you know, that kind of ruined that feud. But, I mean, he had some really you could tell he was a good promo even back then, too.
Yeah, he was always a good promo. I think his ECW stuff is what he's known most for.
Yeah.
But there's just something, because I like Scott Levy. I think him, but he is the Raven. He is Raven. That is who he was meant to play. And that character has took him on so many different journeys. And the idea, because ECW is very 90s, you know, it's very grungy, and no one represents that more than Raven. And the whole taking the poem of the Raven by Edgar Allan Poe and kind of mixing that with a Patrick Swayze character from that one movie, Gen Z or whatever, or I don't know what the fuck it was called, but he kind of took those two inspirations and made the Raven character as like not quite a cult leader, but like an angsty fucking, like, sociopath. He's depressed. Like, and he was just so good at promos, and he was so, like, menacing. And even though he didn't look like the meanest guy or anything, the character was so strong. And you could tell him and Paul were really putting into the character.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too, is that, like, you know, the manipulation and, like, the whole thing, you know, the explanation of the story with Dreamer and Beulah.
Yeah.
Just like, holy, like, you would actually almost believe that that happened.
I mean, to me, that's one of the best. That is probably the best ECW feud of all time, is Raven and Tommy Dreamer. He is the perfect foil for Tommy Dreamer, is the good, because Tommy's more of an everyman. And then you got Raven, who's more of like a scumbag kind of leader that people, but he's cool. There's something cool about him because he's got the leather jacket and the Rock Band shirts. And, you know, you want to follow him.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why you had the Raven's Nest at ECW.
Yeah.
And then that would evolutionize into the Flock in WCW.
Right. And then it would go even further in TNA, The Gathering.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, two of the more famous members of The Gathering, Mr. CM Punk and Miss Alexis Lurie, who's actually Mickie James.
Yeah. All his groups. Wow. I mean, the Flock had so many stars that spurned out of that, like Perry Saturn and Billy Kidman.
Yeah, Saturn and Kidman, obviously the two biggest. But, like, you know, the fact that Lodi was actually able to kind of keep a career going after that.
Yeah.
And Horace, you know, Horace Hogan, Hulk Hogan's nephew, he started out as a member of the Flock.
Yeah.
Like, you would think, and this goes to prove that, you know, unless you suck Hogan's cock, you're not, like, he's not going to put a stamp on you. And apparently Horace didn't believe in incest. But, like, you're Hulk Hogan's nephew, and you have to get over by joining Raven's Flock.
Seems a little weird, right?
It's very weird, but guess what? It happened. Horace, to a point, got himself over.
Oh, he did. And with all that being said, let's get into number 10, Doug.
Okay.
Top 10 matches and moments here, ladies and gentlemen. What do we got for number 10?
Raven's first match with Tommy Dreamer. April 8th, 1995 at ECW's Three-Way Dance. Now, let's kind of preface this as how Raven came into ECW.
Hold on. Should I even preface that?
Yeah.
Well, I can kind of preface it, even though I'll be spoiling a moment coming up for a number here. Raven basically gets brought in basically to feud with Tommy Dreamer. Stevie Richards brings him in because Stevie Richards says, I know the real Johnny Polo.
Well, because he was going through, like, an identity crisis thing at the time, right? Like, he was wrestling as Stevie Polo or Stevie Flamingo and stuff
like
that. Yeah,
or Johnny Flamingo or something like that, whatever it may be. And then the Raven character, you know, debuted, and it was basically Stevie Richards, after losing the Dreamer, brings in Raven. They start this feud. They have this match at Three-Way Dance. Raven wins. Because Raven gets in Tommy's head.
Yeah.
Because he's like, you know, I've known you ever since summer camp.
Yeah.
You know, when we were teenagers. And you're a dick then, and you're a dick now.
Yeah. Because Tommy was like the cool kid. It was like a built-in story, and it was really good.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like Kane and Undertaker, but a little different. And just, like, well, a lot different.
The storytelling that we got from the Kane and Undertaker storyline, except for I feel like this was more, like, sophisticated.
Yeah.
Because this was more, like, not a hatred based on, hey, you tried to fucking kill me.
But, hey, you were the cool kid in summer camp, and I was the fucking nerd, like, loser, like, outcast. And now I'm still an outcast, but chicks like me and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm here to fucking kill you.
Well, and let me ask you guys about this. Now, we don't have to get, obviously, into personal stories, but, like, did you guys ever have, because I know I did, had, like, that, you know, kid that, like, you know, you kind of grew up with, and he was kind of the cool kid, and you were kind of, like, you know, I was kind of like the kid that, like, I wanted to belong, and, like, I had, you know, friends, you know, so to speak, but, like, you know, there was the cool kids that, you know, didn't think I was cool enough. So,
yeah,
like, and like, if I were to see those guys now, I'd be like, fuck you and kick them in the nuts. I mean, did you guys ever have, like, you know,
I mean,
so I can kind of relate to, like, how, like, the Raven character was.
Yeah. And I think that's what's so cool about it is that it is relatable. This could happen anywhere around the country. There's always going to be a social group or a social school, summer camp, whatever it is, where there's the big cool kid, even though Tommy was like a good guy. And that was the thing, that he was a good guy, but he was like the popular jock and Raven just wasn't. He was the outcast. So now he's got this hatred towards it. It makes sense because you've seen it. It's real. It's not, I'm a person that killed my brother or tried to kill my brother. And or my brother was trying to kill the parents and a big fire and all. It was relatable. And that's what was so big. And I think it's what made ECW so popular, because you had a lot of guys that looked like us in there.
Yes.
But this story,
one of us looked like a Blue Meanie.
Probably a mix of all of us. But you put us all in a melting pot, we become one big Blue Meanie. But I just love how the story just, it worked for me. And I think it worked for a lot of people because this could happen anywhere. I mean, the other Gaga stuff, like bringing Buell in and stuff, I still thought that shit was great and it worked and it was awesome. And it kind of took a little bit out of that stuff. I mean, all that stuff was relatable too, but this was very much Jerry Springer type content.
Well, do you want me to get it? Because the Buell moment didn't make the countdown, but do you want me to get into it anyway?
Yeah.
Okay. So that took place on like that night.
When he debuted?
Oh, dang.
No, not when he debuted, but when he beat Dreamer.
Yeah.
So she actually came in that night. She was actually the reason why Raven won.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what the story with her was, and I don't know why the fuck I didn't just all include him in one moment, but
I was thinking that myself.
Shut up. But like the story with her was she was a overweight young lady, and with acne. And she had a crush on Dreamer, but Dreamer said, no.
Yeah.
So Raven started dating her. But yeah, so like that's basically how she came in, because now Raven brought her back because, Raven dated her, when they were kids.
Yeah. And I think that puts more into the story because she was the fat, little outcast girl herself that just wanted the love of Tommy, and Tommy wouldn't give it to her.
Yeah, which is kind of depressing. Like if I were around back then, like if I were a camp counselor, I would have punched Dreamer in the face.
Yeah, but it's not Dreamer's fault. He was just a young kid.
Yeah, well, still, don't ignore the girl.
But, everything about that feud was amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, it's weird that, like, you can almost say, and again, like, I don't know, like, how Pro Wrestling Illustrated rated it or Meltzer rated it, like, what the awards were that year. But you would almost say that, like, that could have been, feud of the year.
Yeah.
95. Obviously, 96 would have been him and Sandman.
Yeah. But this is like, it might be better than him and Sandman. There was just something about this feud. Like, because Dreamer, you can't really put another villain up with him. Like, I think of Tommy Dreamer, I think of Raven.
Yeah. Dreamer didn't have the chemistry, I don't think, with anybody else. Just incredible, maybe.
Yeah. And he did a lot of good stuff, and Dreamer, hell of a worker, will do what
RBD?
He did. Yeah, he did. It was really good. But him and Raven just had a sort of chemistry that it's like, these two guys hate each other. And Dreamer, he just, like with the Beulah stuff and why it made it so emotional, is he just felt bad. And he was like, he's trying to be a good guy. He's like, why is this guy doing all this? But the guy's in his head. And I think that's why, I'm sure, I don't want to spoil anything because I'm sure other matches are later down the line, but the best part of this feud was Raven won every match until the end, and then Dreamer finally beats him. Now, a lot of people will say, well, that's a lame feud. Why did this guy go overall? But it made the feud, because every time you're tuning in and you're hoping this poor bastard finally gets a W and he finally wins, but he cannot overcome the shadow of his past, and that's what makes the feud so so good, in my opinion. What do you think, Eric?
I mean, Raven's feud with Tommy Dreamer was probably one of the best ECW feuds in the history.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know what you guys think is number one, but it could be like top three.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Is that, now, are you saying like top three like all time, or just top three in like ECW?
ECW.
And that's the thing. It's like in ECW, I would say, top three, maybe top two. Like all time, like if you have all time feuds, I would probably put this in like a top 20.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
and it belongs in the top.
There was a real story between the two. It's like,
well,
Detroit.
I mean, we don't actually know if Raven and Tommy were actually.
I don't think they hated each other in real life.
Yeah, I don't think they ever went to summer camp together. I felt like that was just like Raven just.
Just being Raven?
Yeah, Raven, the character, just, you know, telling a good story.
Yeah, exactly.
And you need to have a good storyteller in wrestling.
Well, he's one of the best.
Yeah. Unfortunately, if you were around for today's product, Nick Khan would have fired him already.
Yeah.
But,
I agree.
Yeah.
You want to get into number 9?
Yes. It's another Raven Dreamer thing. It's the Loser Leaves ECW match from WrestlePalooza, June 6, 1997. Raven and Dreamer.
Oh, get June 6th. I'm actually watching it right now.
All right. Well, do you not want me to?
When,
I mean, I have to talk about it. We're on air. But,
yeah.
So, this match was funny because this match actually wasn't supposed to happen until Hardcore Heaven, which was going to be in August. But they upped it because Raven was leaving.
For WCW.
Correct. And the thing about...
All right, keep going.
But, like, the thing about that is, Raven, like, you know, they had to give, like, a good, you know, ending to the story. The only thing I didn't like about the match is there was, like, 58 DDTs.
Yeah. But that was one of Raven's go-tos.
Yeah. And Dreamer liked it, too.
Yeah.
You had all these guys come in at the end.
Yeah, like after the match was over.
Yeah,
Gary.
It was a really good one.
Yeah, Jerry Lawler came in, and that started the ECW-WWF invasion thing.
Which was very cool.
I mean, I enjoyed it.
Sabu, RVD.
Yeah.
They all attacked Dreamer.
Yeah, and then, like, Sandman tried to get involved, and he got beat up, and then Taz came out, and... Shane Douglas stayed up in the commentary booth. He's like, nah, you go ahead and beat their ass. I'm good up here. Fucking Pittsburgh pussy.
I was going to say that.
I hate Shane Douglas with a passion. But yeah, no. So, like, I do think that moment does belong on the list because obviously, like, that was the end of the feud at the time.
That was all WrestlePalooza, right?
Yeah.
Does the dismember thing get brought up later?
Or
do we get into it now? With the whole pregnancy reveal.
No, it doesn't come up, but oh yeah, when Beulah turned, right?
Yeah. Because that's a huge part of the story and we have to talk about that. When at House Party 1996. Stevie Richards tries to kiss Beulah. She says no. And then she says she's pregnant. Raven gets all pissed. And to me, this is one of the best moments, too, because he's flipping out. And then she looks at him and says, it's not yours.
And then he starts beating the shit out of Richards.
Yeah. He beats the shit out of Richards. And then our Dreamer comes out. Or no, she reveals that Tommy was the dad. And then Dreamer comes to the ring and beats the shit out of Ravens and Richards.
Yeah, and then somehow it gets revealed that, like, she's not pregnant. Like, later on, like, they reveal, like, she's not pregnant or something.
Yeah.
Or not even that she's not pregnant, but the fact that she's been kind of fucking around with somebody else.
Yeah.
And Dreamer wanted to know who. And Kimono Wanalea comes out. And Dreamer's like, oh, cool. I'll fuck them both.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Because when Kimono was introduced, like, it was real weird because she came out as Raven's new girlfriend, and then Raven got tired of her. So before a match with Damian 666, he slapped Kimona and then threw her out of the ring. Actually threw her. Get out of here. And then, you know, she started the three-way with and Dreamer.
Which, Tommy Dreamer, for a fat guy with a dad bod, the luckiest man in pro wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah,
yep.
I just, everything about this feud was amazing, and I think that was a good ending for the time, too.
Oh, I think so, too.
All right, what do we got at number 8?
Raven's first ECW title win versus the Sandman on January the 27th, 1996.
Now, we know how crazy...
Was this on a network? I was trying to find it.
It might be under the hardcore... just look for ECW's Hardcore TV. If they have any of the 96 episodes, just look for something either... Just look for something after January 27th, because they have to cover it. I would say look for a week after January 27th, 1996.
And that was the night he actually debuted Kimona, right?
Yeah.
That's nuts. It just always felt like a story was being told in ECW. People just think it was blood and guts, but it was a lot more than that.
They always talk about the gratuitous violence. They talk about it, you know, gratuitously.
Yeah, but some of the storytelling was better than what WWF was putting out, WCW.
Yeah. Well, because... If you look at it, okay, so comparison time, right? January 27th, 1996, when this happened. So you have, this is on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. The Monday and Tuesday before, WCW had their clashes. Okay. And Macho Man wins the WCW title, but then loses the next day. Or doesn't lose the title, but loses in the tag match. And you had other stuff going on. Like you had the King of Trust Lex Luger storyline. You had the Dungeon of Doom Hogan storyline. Brian Pillman was starting with the whole loose cannon stuff. In the WWF, you had the Diesel's upset that other people are getting title shots besides him.
Yeah.
You also have, you know, Vader, you know, the other night on Raw, attacked Gorilla Monsoon. And Gorilla Monsoon, he was like a grandfather to people, a father figure to people.
Yeah.
So Vader beat up somebody's grandpa.
But very classic wrestling storylines.
When you're
talking very run-of-the-mill wrestling storylines that have been used before and will be used again.
Yeah, exactly. They've been used, gratuitously. But here, it's something Raven... did not want to repeat anything. Raven had always said, I want to be original.
And it feels like ECW as a whole, too, though, sometimes, because, we talk about alternatives and shit, and I know AEW is want to be an alternative. It's not an alternative to WWE. I thought it could be, and I thought it would. I don't think it is. I think you're seeing maybe better wrestling on that channel, but I don't know if you're seeing something completely different from WWE. ECW is a true alternative.
Right.
WCW wasn't even an alternative, but ECW was a true alternative to the wrestling products we were getting at the time. And Raven represented that tenfold.
Right, exactly. And, that's the thing, is that, now, you look at it nowadays, but there is so much wrestling out there to watch. But,
yes,
the thing is that, you can watch all of them. And not really be competing. It's just okay, if you want to tune in, WWE has, Roman Reigns. He's probably their best thing on television right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
You turn on to AEW and you see what Hangman Page is doing. They have, AEW has a really good tag division.
Yeah.
And other stuff, and you have the other different characters.
Yeah.
And let's say you tune in to MLW to see some of their guys, because they have different characters. They have Jacob Fatu and Alexander Hammerstone. and the Azteca stuff, you know, with the former Dario Cueto of Lucha Underground. You tune into Impact and see all that stuff. It's different. It's not called competition. It's called different things to watch.
Oh yeah.
Different reasons to watch each show.
NWA.
So, let's say you watch Raw just to see Becky Lynch or Bobby Lashley.
Yeah.
Then you're gonna watch NXT to see their women's division.
Yeah.
Then you're going to watch SmackDown because you want to see what Roman Reigns is doing and, you know, which Uso, or, you know, which Uso is going to suck which side, which nut. or you're going to see how, tune into SmackDown to see how much of a brat Charlotte Flair is going to be that night.
Right. What's the point here?
The point is that, like, just like back then, okay, you weren't trying to decide. I mean, like they call it the Monday Night War and all that. But like with ECW, ECW was on a different night. So you would tune into ECW to watch like what Dreamer was doing, what Raven was doing,
yeah,
what Sandman was doing. And you tune in on Raw to see, you know, what Bret Hart's up to. Tune in to WCW to see, you know, who Hogan's making job to him.
Yeah.
That's the point, is that the alternatives, it's called competition, but it's really not. It's just called, you tune in to watch the different stuff.
But what my point is, though, is I don't think that all of them are truly alternatives, though. Because, like, MLW just seems like a low-budget AEW show. TNA seems like a low-budget AEW show. AEW just seems like a different version of something WWE would do. All that, even WWF in the day and WCW, it's like a lot of these guys are guys that were here before or here now. Or the ECW is the only one that felt like a true alternative. And that's my point. What made ECW, and not just the hardcore stuff, but even with the storytelling. They were doing stuff here that never has been done anywhere else, and it might never will be. It was completely different. And I think that's what made it stand out.
Yeah, and that is true, because Paul Heyman did not want to be like everybody else.
Yeah. And he wasn't.
Yeah, exactly, because Bischoff and McMahon had no problem spending money. Heyman would pay you in Monopoly money.
He'd ask for a $20 check. All right, let's get into number 7.
Okay.
I do have a question.
What's up?
Do you think CZW is the closest thing to ECW?
Yeah, but just in the hardcore sense. Like, to me, that's gratuitous bullshit. I'm sorry. And I know there's a lot of fans out there. But they don't have anything storytelling-wise what ECW had, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, no. No, I agree. I thought it was just a low-budget, even lower-budget ECW.
Yeah, it seemed like it. All right, Doug, number 7, let's go.
Okay, Holiday Hell, December 7th, 1996. Raven versus Sandman in a barbed wire match for the ECW title.
This is where Raven won?
Yeah, Raven won. He was defending, he won the title from him. So he won the title back from Sandman.
Okay, so this is his second reign.
Started the second reign, yes.
No. No, he didn't. At 96?
Yes.
Yeah. Was this all in the storyline with Sandman and his wife still, or no?
Yeah, because Sandman Sandman had defeated, didn't even defeat Raven, but Richards took his place and he beat Raven. The ECW title was supposed to be on the line in the tag match. Raven couldn't compete, so Richards took his place. Richard lost the title on his behalf. And Raven had already, like, convinced Laurie and Tyler to join him. and Sandman was at a press conference, you know, talking about his title win, and Lori, because she was going nuts, had cut a promo and said, you're never going to see Tyler again. Raven took him out of the country, and he's not coming back until Raven gets the title back.
Yeah.
That bitch needed to be dropped on her fucking head.
How did that end up ending? I forgot how that ended. Because didn't the kid eventually hug Sandman?
Yeah, but then Raven, it was kind of a setup, because that's when Raven hit him in the head with the kendo stick, and I think that's when Raven crucified him.
Oh, it was that night?
I think so.
Oh, wait, we'll get to that one. Is that on the countdown? Is that? Oh. Can I talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, go ahead.
But I did watch. So, apparently when I watched a video last night on YouTube, Kurt Angle was in the bath or something. He didn't like it. And Paul Heyman didn't know it was happening, apparently, according to what Paul Heyman said. And Angle was so mad that he said if this happens again, he didn't want to be associated with that, so he left. And then a couple months later, it happened in WWE, didn't it?
A couple years later.
And he was in WWE at the time too, right?
No, he hadn't gotten there yet. But WWE got away with it because he was they
called it a symbol.
Yeah,
it wasn't a cross; it was a symbol.
Ah, okay.
Michael Cole said it at least 5,000 times.
Yeah,
he's putting it on the symbol. It's a cross, Michael.
But like the thing is with the whole thing with them putting him on a cross, and Eric, let me ask you this, because you are an avid, you know, goer of church.
Okay.
How did you feel about it?
It's pro wrestling, so I separate that and church, so it's like, it's just storyline. So I wasn't offended of it. And listening to Sandman, he wasn't even offended. He liked it.
Well, he was also drunk half the time. But I asked that because, like, there were people that were backstage that hated it, that didn't want
Angle.
Yeah, we could have got Angle in ECW, for God's sakes. That ruined that.
Well, Raven was just like, there was no way they were going to sign him, so they need to shut the fuck up. Raven's words, not really mine.
Yeah, because he came out later in the night. It was supposed to say, I'm sorry, but it was more like a fuck you, right?
It was the
he did apologize.
Sincere apology.
Yeah, but it wasn't like sincere. It was very...
It was forced.
Yeah.
It was basically, I'm sorry, you're all pussies.
Yeah.
And it happened in Philadelphia, right? Yeah. Did it?
Yeah, I think so. Like, because according to Raven, Kurt Angle was offended by it, Taz was offended by it, Joey Styles was offended by it, and Francine, who was managing, I think she had already turned on the pit bulls and gone with, fuck chais.
The fuck chais.
Yeah. She was offended by it because she's, she's Catholic.
Yeah.
So she went up to Paul and said, unless you want me to quit, you're making him apologize. And he's like, eh?
Yeah.
He's like, do I have to? But yeah, he went up to
Raven. Raven didn't even want to apologize.
No, because he didn't think he did anything wrong. And then he argued with Joey Styles about it. And Joey's just like, well, it bothered me. And he goes, Joey, you use the Lord's name in vain all the time when you say, oh, my God.
Yeah. Which is true.
You did have a point there. Yeah.
Oh, my God really isn't this. It's not like a God, darn it. Or that's not like using the Lord's name in vain like that. But he's got a bit of a point. So,
but like,
now if it happened in 2021, this happened.
If it happened in 2021,
right,
whoever did it would probably either be fired or the show would be canceled. Because like, you're not going to be able to
exactly.
get away with this shit. The only reason why they got away with it is because that show was in syndication, and it wasn't syndicated
yeah.
on a major network.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, what's number 6?
A lot of people probably don't even know about it.
Yeah. Raven versus CM Punk in the Clockwork Orange House of Fun and Ring of Honor on September the 6th, 2003.
Now, his Ring of Honor work is kind of underrated because he did go there and do a lot of the same stuff he was doing in TNA, but he got to work with guys like CM Punk,
yep.
and it really worked out.
And what's funny is that, like, when this match happened, so him and CM Punk were feuding in Ring of Honor, right? In TNA, Punk was part of the Gathering.
Yeah. People weren't watching Ring of Honor, though, so it's okay.
A lot of people didn't even know. I had no idea Ring of Honor existed at the time. I barely knew TNA.
20th anniversary was supposed to be next year.
Huh?
The 20th anniversary of Ring of Honor was supposed to be next year.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate that that's not going to happen.
Yeah,
but,
it is. And I was a big Ring of Honor fan. You know, we went to a couple of Ring of Honor shows, so.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, like, I like Ring of Honor, too.
Yeah.
Because they had a good crop of talent. Unfortunately, you know, they're all... unfortunately, like, they all went to WWE, and then WWE fired them when Nick Khan took over. But,
yeah, I mean, they just never had the paybook to really
yeah.
keep anybody besides the Briscoe brothers.
Right. Well, and now they're going to, obviously.
And Jay Lethal.
Huh?
And Jay Lethal, because Jay Lethal was.
No, he went to TNA and then came back. Wrong.
No, he did start Ring of Honor.
Okay.
Yeah, and then he went to TNA and then came back. But they did lose him for
oh, yeah, yeah.
Period.
Yeah. No, you're right.
That's true, yeah. My bad.
It's okay. I'm just kidding anyway. What do we got at number 5, Doug?
All right, this one I'm very excited about. Raven and Chris Benoit from Sold Out 1998.
Okay, and I was excited to talk about his WCW run.
Right.
Because he came to the Flock, he came in with the Flock, and his WCW stuff, if you really watch it, it's almost right there with his ECW. It's not there, and Paul, don't kill me, but his WCW stuff, besides, because I want to talk about that too, because it's one of the worst moments, but besides the reveal that he's just a rich, spoiled kid, his WCW stuff was phenomenal. I think that killed the character, but I thought his stuff in WCW
yeah.
is phenomenal.
By the way, Heyman's probably not even listening to this right now. They're 45 minutes away from SmackDown going on the air. He's got to give Roman the, you know, the pre-SmackDown hand jab.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have time to listen to this.
But
Raven might be listening to it, though.
Yeah, Raven probably is. Hey, Raven. But this match was awesome for a variety of reasons. One, because you had two completely different styles and
right.
two people that could go.
And it was... This match has been, it's supposed to happen for a month.
Hey, get into the story, Doug.
So, Raven comes into WCW. He's there for a couple of months, but, like, the story is he hadn't signed a contract. And then he's going to wrestle Scotty Graves at World War III, 97. And J.J. Dillon comes out and says, Raven's got 24 hours to sign a contract, or this is his last match here. Like, so... Sign a contract so you can legally work here or go away. So then after the match with Riggs, he started having problems with his pancreas. And so they did a thing where, like, Benoit was supposed to wrestle him the next night, but he kept sending members of the Flock out there every week. And then he was supposed to have the match with Benoit at Starrcade. And then, but his pancreas was still inflamed. So they had to hold off. He was finally cleared to wrestle by Sold Out. And they had this match. And Sold Out is actually a very underrated pay-per-view because a lot of stuff, like a lot of monumental stuff did happen there. And this was a bout on the undercard that I really look forward to.
Yeah?
Yeah. And the fact that Raven showed his threshold for pain, he was trapped in the crippled crossface. He passed out. He didn't tap.
That's awesome. And it showed you how, you know, even though he was kind of this smug bad guy, it showed you the warrior spirit that he had, too.
Right, exactly. And Benoit, I think, was like the perfect, and he even said that, that Benoit was a good opponent for him.
Yeah.
Now, he would actually go on to say he didn't like Benoit. But, you know, they did work well together.
Yeah, no, they had great chemistry. It was definitely a hard-fought match.
Yeah.
All right, Dougie, number four. As voted on by the fans and all our various groups, including Old School Wrestling, we appreciate you and keep voting on this shit.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, this is how we're going to do this from now on.
Yeah. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, I'm enjoying this because we're talking about, you know, certain moments that, like, you know, probably don't get talked about a lot.
Yeah.
All right. So, number four, we kind of already talked about it earlier, but it's Raven debuting in ECW. Getting brought in by Stevie Richards. I almost wanted to call him Steven. After Stevie loses to Tommy Dreamer, he brings in Raven, and it's off to the races.
Yeah, I mean, it was a badass way to debut. It, you know, it started the legendary run that he had there. I don't know if there's much more to say about it.
Right.
All right, let's do
good promo.
Yeah.
Great promo.
Raven returns to ECW and wins the tag team titles from Tommy Dreamer with Tommy Dreamer from the Dudley Boys.
Now, this was weird, right? It was cool. I mean,
yeah.
They were very reluctant to do so, but it made sense, and it does have everything coming in full circle.
Well, and that's the thing, is the Dudley Boys were leaving.
Yeah.
They had accepted a job to work with Vince, and they had just won the tag titles back, which made no fucking sense from Spike and Balls.
Yeah.
Even though Joey Styles kept saying during the match that they were leaving.
Yeah.
But Paul gave them the belts back. So they figured they were going to take him with them. But then, you know, on their last night, which is what you were supposed to do. All right, so old school territory rules clearly state that you are supposed to do a job on your way out to put the next guy over, kind of, you know, pass the torch.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like, you know, nowadays, a lot of guys, instead of passing the torch, they light a fart with it. So, and hoping to blow the guy, hoping to blow smoke in the other guy's face.
Yeah.
So, but like here, the Dudley Boys, obviously, they were going to do it. And then Raven was coming back. So, do you want me to get into how Raven left WCW?
Yeah.
Because it kind of ties into this.
Yeah, do it.
So, Raven was injured. He couldn't really, like, wrestle from, like, May through, like, July, August. And he had joined the Deadpool, which was the Insane Clown Posse and Vampiro.
I forgot about that group.
Yeah. And in a backstage meeting that Eric Bischoff had with the talent in mid-August, Eric had told the talent, he's like, if you don't want to be here anymore, leave.
Yeah.
Raven got up, said, I'll see you later, and he walked out of the room. He was the only one that got up at that meeting.
Really?
And Bischoff actually talked about this on the podcast.
Really?
Yeah, well, on his podcast. He didn't come out on this one and talk about it. But, yeah, no, Bischoff had said, he goes, yeah, Scotty got up, he said, see you later, and he was done. And then when they had to file the paperwork, Bischoff actually slapped a no-compete on him because he didn't want to – because Raven wanted to go to the WWF, but Bischoff was just like, no, like, that ain't happening.
Yeah.
So he said, all right, well, can I go back to ECW? And he's like, well, yeah, since you're not going to make any money, go ahead. And because he didn't like where things were going in WCW. And he knew that, like, you know, ECW would welcome him back with open arms. So he went back there, and then showing up and becoming Tommy Dreamer's tag team partner, like, that was just like, these two wanted to fucking kill each other 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then, like, they didn't get along.
No. But it did make it kind of come full circle, and it was a good story because it's like these two guys with bad blood like that had to come together for ECW to get the belts back.
And it was Francine that kind of was just like, you know, Francine kind of, you know, kept the two of them together because Raven kind of had a crush on her. So, like, Francine was playing the role.
Who wouldn't have a crush on her?
Francine?
She was very attractive. Yeah.
She was.
She was. All right, so, and I use this analogy a lot, right? You have Francine and you have Beulah. Beulah is the kind of girl that, like, you would want to marry, right?
Yeah.
You know, she's, I call it housewife hot.
Yeah, I know. I've heard this before.
Okay. Francine is stripper hot.
Yeah, I guess.
But, like, I mean, I see where, like, a lot of guys would be like, oh, you know, she is kind of hotter. Because she is.
Yeah.
I'm not saying strippers aren't hot.
You like the match, though?
The tag title match?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but, like, I'll say this, too, about the, like, Francine was kind of the Beulah of this storyline.
Yeah.
You know, kind of trying to keep the two of them, like, together, like, because Raven, you know, was doing this for, technically, for Beulah, and, or not for Beulah, for Francine, because, you know, Beulah couldn't work, well, it's not that she couldn't work anymore, but they wrote her off, like, the year before, because, you know, her and Tommy had kids. I actually think, like, she was...
Oh.
She wanted to go home. She wanted to be a mom.
But they're not together anymore, are they?
No, they're still married.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure they're still married because well, unless she divorced them when he made an ass out of himself on Dark Side of the Ring.
Who?
Dreamer.
Yeah.
Dreamer and Beulah, because, you know,
I thought
Dreamer.
I always thought Francine was
a helicopter.
Yeah. What's number two?
Number two, Raven versus Kane versus Big Show for the hardcore title at WrestleMania 17.
Yeah, this is cool, too, because I wanted to talk about his WWE run. Why didn't it work? This match worked, but why didn't the WWF work as a whole?
Because they only had one place for him.
The hardcore division.
Yeah. Because they didn't get him.
Yeah.
And the reason why you didn't get him is because by the time he got there, they had writers.
Yeah.
You had a bunch of dumb fuck assholes that were writing your promo for you.
Yeah, writing scripts and shit.
Writing a script. And he'd be like, I don't need a script. It can be me. Oh, no, you know, this is what you got to do. Fuck you. So that's why it didn't work. It's because, you know, they wanted him to be something he was not.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a sheep. He does, you know, he marches to the beat of his own drum.
Yeah.
The only...
That's why he's likable.
Yeah. The only people in from ECW that were actually able to thrive in WWE... were the Dudleys and Van Damme to a point.
And Tajiri.
Tajiri, because Tajiri was able to tap into that funny side.
But he did well, damn it.
I like Tajiri.
He did well for what he was given. Now, this hardcore match is one of my favorite WrestleMania matches of all time. And Big Show and Kane are so outmatching. They outmatch Raven in such a big way. But he was still a part of that match, and it was awesome them going backstage and beating the shit out of each other. And he always seemed like he had a chance.
He got thrown through a fucking window.
Yeah, at the end.
Yeah.
But it was just a really good match. It was a great fight.
Well, what I'm saying is that, like, that just shows how tough he is.
Yeah. So I love that match. What did you think, Eric?
I thought it was probably one of the best matches on the card. I mean, WrestleMania, and we talked about this several times, but WrestleMania 17 was a stacked card. And for a stacked card, it was probably a top five match on that card.
I'd probably have to agree with you. All right, Doug, to close out our list of top 10 moments in matches, this has been a great time. You having fun, Eric?
Yeah, I'm interested to see what number one is. I thought that would be number one.
The number one moment or match that Raven was involved with in his career.
When he first introduced Sandman's family.
Ooh.
That was
I never saw this, so this is
1996. What?
I've never seen this part, so.
Basically, it was just he brought him in and which, by the way, Sandman's wife actually used to be Sandman's manager.
Yeah.
Back in the early days, she was known as Peaches.
Right.
Oh, wow. And it's his real wife that he brought in. Not some.
Was she really his ex-wife, though?
No, I think they were still married at the time.
Okay.
Obviously, they're not married now.
Actually, no, because I think they did get divorced because they actually brought her back in 2000, but they called her his girlfriend. Sandman's girlfriend, Lori Fullington. It's like, that's his fucking wife. Joey Styles is so fucking stupid.
But these moments in particular, I think is what truly cements him as one of the greatest characters of all time, is that he made this stuff work, and that's what made his character so sinister and so scary, was the fact he got this man's... Sandman is a real motherfucker. If there's anyone that you don't want to meet at a bar at 2 a.m. and piss off, it is Sandman. Sandman looks like this big, gruff, drink a beer, smoke a cigarette, punch you in the face type of guy. That is who the Sandman is. That's what he represents. So the fact that this guy wants to get under his skin so bad so he can get that belt, that he takes the dude's wife and child, and he puts the child in the Raven's nest, and now the child is saying, I want Raven to be my daddy. And now you're seeing Sandman fall apart and cry and break down. That was great television.
Yeah, and by the way, the kid's only 7 years old.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just, like, such a scumbag move, but it's just, like, holy shit.
Right.
Like, nobody had done it before, and it really hadn't done it since. Well, because it is technically considered, like, inhumane to get a child involved like that.
But I thought it was awesome. And I thought it really showed how good he was.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But, yeah. All right, this was a great time, guys. Top 10 moments and matches.
I feel like we do need to kind of touch on, and I'm disappointed that none of his TNA stuff really made it on the list.
Yeah.
Because in TNA, he created, the Clockwork Orange House of Fun match. He created the Hangman's Horror Gallows of Retribution match. And by the way, the Hangman's Horror match, there's only ever been two. All right, the first one was with Vampiro.
Oh, wow.
And
him and Vampiro had great chemistry.
Yeah, except for they also really didn't like each other. They got into a backstage fight, and Vampiro tore his ACL. And the Hangman's Horror match was you actually had to hang your opponent over the rope until he passed out. So until his face turned purple.
You have to strangle a man to
win
the match.
Yes.
Yeah.
Damn.
It explains
why there's only
been two. Yeah.
It happened in TNA. The first one was in October of 2003, and the next one I think was like in June of 2004.
And that was basically back to Raven.
Oh, so
TNA.
Early.
Yeah.
And that was back.
Early TNA.
Yeah, they were still in the asylum. Go
and
ahead.
That was back when Raven finally got creative control again.
Yeah.
And he wasn't reading off the script anymore. He was able to do his promos. And he was able to, you know, do pro wrestling the way he wanted to do it.
By the way, this was before the Carters had minority ownership. They were just the financial backers.
Yeah.
So this is back when Jeff still had like the final say.
So Jeff was letting Raven do his shit.
Yeah.
And it worked. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, because there knows wrestling.
I thought a lot of his TNA stuff, minus the stuff with, what's his name's son? Eric Watts. Minus that shit, I think his TNA stuff was amazing.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, like, again, you know, Eric just said, you know, Jeff Jarrett knows wrestling. Jeff Jarrett, I think, has seen enough shit to where he knows he's just like, okay, I'm not going to be a dictator.
Yeah.
My father sucked at it. So let me just give these guys the freedom.
Yeah, do
it. And if it doesn't work, you know, we'll tweak it.
Yeah.
But Jeff Jarrett was really good at letting these guys be themselves.
Yeah. And Raven was an example of that.
Yeah.
And that's why his best work is when he gets to do that.
Right, exactly.
Now, before we leave here, there's two speed fire questions I want to ask you, Doug.
Okay.
One, why did Johnny Polo not work?
Because it was goofy. Yeah. Like, it was just, I mean, they put him with the Quebecers. He's from New Jersey.
There you go. Now, the second one, and we're going to end on
He's from Philadelphia.
He's from Philadelphia.
Right.
Now, we're going to end on this
thing.
So, no other comments or questions. If you have them, get them out now.
Make sure you catch Eric and the Dirt Sheet Dudes tonight at 10 o'clock.
There you go. And we do got to do plugs here at the end. I forgot.
Yeah.
But that segment in WCW where they go to his house and they find out that he's this rich, spoiled kid, do you think it killed the character?
Yes.
Why?
Because it just, I mean, it showed another dimension, but they weren't really going to do anything with it.
Yeah, and I think part of him is that he was this social outcast and that, you know, what about me? What about Raven? And I understand that that kind of goes with that a little bit. But he always whined, but he never felt like he was this rich kid. It just didn't seem like him. He was the outcast. He was the grunge kid. He was the – you didn't think of him that he had rich parents and stuff and a pool and all this, and he was just bitching to bitch. So I think it really did him a disservice.
No, I think so too.
Now, with that being said, make sure to check out the Dirt Sheet Dudes every Wednesday and Saturday after AEW Dynamite while it's still on TNT and Saturday at whatever time for the Hollywood Hangout.
Yes. They are doing according to Eric, they are doing a show tonight.
All right, so they're doing Hollywood Hangout.
There was
tonight.
No show on Wednesday.
All right, well, then they're doing the wrestling show tonight? What the fuck are they doing?
We're doing the wrestling show tonight.
And then Hollywood
Hangout. Probably doing Watch Along with Rampage.
Okay, cool.
I don't know. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Check us out.
Oh, it's
I'll
us.
I'll probably be on.
It's us, okay?
When you fire Eric from this show, he has to have something to fall back on.
But,
I'm a dedicated podcaster.
And you're damn good at it, sweetheart. Let me finish the plug now, all right? Now, Unscripted Wrestling, check us out at 6:30 p.m. on Fridays. Make sure to check out Unscripted Unlimited around 6 on Saturdays, 6, 7, or 8 usually.
No, tomorrow.
Tomorrow is at 2, but usually it's 6, 7, or 8. Make sure to check Scaredy Cats out on Sunday at 3 p.m. for me and Mindy. I'll be announcing the movie we're doing tomorrow on Unlimited. And make sure to check out all the good stuff we're doing in the future. And with that being said, Raven did a lot for Goldberg in helping Goldberg.
Yeah.
That we didn't get to talk about. But that scene where Goldberg beats up the Flock helped make Goldberg. So we got to throw that in there.
And the fans throwing Raven back over the guardrail.
Yeah. Does anyone have anything else? Eric?
You said you're going to July 2 tomorrow?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Cool.
All right, guys. Everyone have a good one.
Later.
Later.